Little Emily biting her sister, or is teenage Barry refusing to help around the house? Consulting psychologist David Carey joins us to answer all your parenting woes. David Carey is with us once again for our parenting slot. David, good afternoon.
Salutations.
To you too. My 9-year-old autistic son is fascinated by dark skin. He wishes his skin was black. He wonders out loud if black people are made of chocolate and asks what they taste like. This has led to some embarrassing situations where people have been very understanding. I tell him we don't talk about how people look, but to no avail. Recently, he has targeted a boy at school and has encouraged other people to call him names and try and eat him. This kid has understandably been upset. Because he's autistic, there's no point in appealing to his empathy. Any suggestions?
Well, what an interesting scenario. 9-year-old boy on the spectrum, of course, he's going to observe things literally and concretely and comment on them sometimes at that level. And he now has developed a fascination. You must tell him not to say these things aloud, that it's okay to think them, but we don't say them aloud. And I think it's time for parents to consider working with class teacher and spending 10 minutes talking to the class about their son, the fact that, and you may want to use the word autism to the children or not, it's entirely up to you, but let other children know that he thinks in a different way. And because he thinks in a different way, sometimes he says things that we really shouldn't be saying.
Yeah.
But we're not going to pay a lot of attention to it. We're not going to be angry with him for it. We're not going to comment back to him about it. A little 10-minute conversation, whole class education really is what's called for here.
Yeah. What is he supposed, you know, like if you're 9 or even younger, you can imagine how a kid's going to say, oh, that person there has different color skin to me. Isn't that just natural that they'd say
that's
that?
Just natural. But of course, because he's on the spectrum, he's now obsessed with it and saying it repeatedly. Many children will make one or two comments about it, and then that's the end of it. But
yeah,
it's stuck in his head. So he's perseverating, as we call it. It's like an old vinyl record when the needle got stuck. Do you remember?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And so that's kind of what's happening in his brain. He wants to make the same comment over and over and over again, wondering if black people are made of chocolate. Now it's extending to encouraging other children to try to eat him. It's playful. It means nothing. There is no malice intended.
Yeah.
And I'm sure the vast majority of people of color who have heard him make such a comment pass it off with tremendous good nature. They can realize and look immediately that the boy has a special education need. And people are generally quite forgiving of that. But I think some education in the classroom is really necessary because other children lack the sophistication that an adult mind would have or that an older adolescent would have, particularly at age 9. So it could become a source of some embarrassment or worse to the child who's being targeted. In other words, the child of color in the class.
Yeah.
So I'd work with the class teacher. This is generally a good idea, by the way, parents. If you have a child who has a significant disability, as we call them, may disagree with the terminology, but nonetheless, that's what the accepted term is. It sometimes is a good idea to go into the class, talk to the children, and let them know, okay, you know, David thinks a little bit differently. His brain works a little differently than everyone else, but he's bright, loves to have friends. Sometimes he says the wrong thing. Sometimes he does the wrong thing, but we're all here to help. And teacher will chime in with that. We're all here to help. We're all here to understand one another. We're all here to make sure our classroom is a friendly, safe place of good humor and no insult. So we're going to help David understand that there are things he shouldn't be saying. We're not going to entertain him when he does say them. We're not going to laugh and snigger and therefore reinforce him saying it. This can be handled very discreetly and very easily, I think.
Yeah, because he won't, he probably, well, I suppose he, if everybody else stops reinforcing this, will he kind of let it go eventually himself?
I think perhaps. It's hard to say.
Yeah.
It's tricky when you're dealing with a brain that's on the spectrum because they perceive things completely differently than we do. We do not understand how they see the world.
Mm.
They don't understand how we perceive the world. Talking too much with them and to them about it is useless. because I'd like to remind our listeners that everyone on the spectrum, regardless of how well their language development may be organized and how articulate they may be, every single individual on the spectrum has a 25% delay in processing verbal input. So the more you talk, the more they get jumbled up in their head about what you're saying. They're going to look at you. It'll look as if they're attending. They'll nod. They will say yes if you ask, do I understand? But that doesn't mean they comprehend.
Mm.
So few words and educate the other children. Teacher's responsibility is to create a harmonious, joyful classroom. That is the responsibility of the teacher, working with parents in some instances to see that it happens.
My 16-month-old son has had foot and mouth disease for the last 2.5 weeks. It really knocked him for six. His temperature is normal now for the last 3 days, but he's still being awkward with food. He lost a good bit of weight and was chubby before, so it's okay as long as he puts it back on now. He's waking up from nap in a complete mood and is only happy when being held. My mother says they often change a lot when they have been sick. Is that right? Is this the new normal? Any suggestions on food, as I've tried all consistencies and types?
Well, I cannot make any suggestions on food. That's beyond my ken. Mm. In regards to whether a change in personality and needing to be nurtured and cuddled more after a significant illness, of course, that's to be expected, particularly at 16 months of age. I see nothing to be alarmed about that. Cuddle, reassure, comfort. Soon enough, within weeks, he will return to baseline personality, baseline sensitivities, etc.
Yeah.
It's unfortunate that he's been sick like this. And having a high fever and being so sick and losing a lot of weight is very, very distressing to an individual's biology. You can't expect a 16-month to bounce back quickly from that. This is adjustment difficulties in the body, biological. And what does he want? He wants to be comforted, to know everything's okay. That's a good thing.
Mm.
In regards to the food, maybe a listener has suggestions, but it's not for me to even begin to approach that.
Yeah. Actually, a couple of comments on the previous question we had about the autistic child. Why is it always falling back on the teacher? The parent should take control of this problem. Someone else says, isn't it possible that the child heard an adult presenting a bad explanation of black skin? Well, I mean, it's a classroom situation, so of course it should fall on the teacher.
I would urge that texter to read the first volume of the revised primary curriculum, which says that the classroom teacher, and I'm nearly quoting now, has the primary responsibility for the education of every child. You better read it, you better highlight it, and it's time to live it.
My daughter is almost 11 and has in the past few days got her first period. She understands why she has periods. She's okay with it. We all have the necessary supplies ready, etc. But she's had a load of cramping pain with it. I've given her paracetamol and a hot water bottle, and she said to me in a sad voice, so I seriously have to have this every month for the next 30 or 40 years of my life. Oh, the poor little thing. She's been weepy and gloomy since the period happened. Is she too young for the oral contraceptive pill if she's still having severe pain with it?
I can't answer that question. Now, that's a question for your GP. Sean, aren't you glad you're a guy? I mean,
oh, God, yeah. There's so many reasons.
You know, 11 at the age of...
That's very young.
Yeah, that's... Well, you know, the age of puberty, particularly amongst girls, is lowering. 11 and 12 is not uncommon.
Mm.
It's still a bit precocious. You've already educated her about it. That's a good thing. I'm wondering, amongst her peers in school and whatnot, is she struggling and having some difficulty? Usually not. These things are handled with great delicacy, generally speaking. Is she going to have this every month for the next 30 or 40 years of her life? I think, regrettably, the answer is probably yes. And it is a wonderful thing, of course, because it's a sign of the ability to create life and give birth to new life. That will be of no comfort to her during her times of pain and discomfort. Last part of the issue here, you really need to talk to the GP. I can't answer that question.
But I suppose it's too early to say whether, on an ongoing basis, how severe her period of pains are going to be.
I don't know about this myself. I don't think you can predict 30 years from now whether her level of discomfort now will be as severe as it is.
Yeah. My 7-year-old little girl has developed what my husband and I think are tics. It started when she would sit down to do her homework. Her baby finger would flick up and down when she would write. That was approximately a year ago. It has now developed into all fingers and wrists on both hands, even when she is at ease. I am concerned it might be an indication of something more serious going on. Also, when she's eating, before she takes a bite, she curls her lip back before each bite. She seems to be moving her toes like her fingers. My husband tends to think it's nothing to worry about, as apart from suffering with a little bit of anxiety, as my mother, my guts tell me it's not normal behaviour, as none of these friends or cousins present with these symptoms. Has she just developed these physical symptoms to calm some sort of underlying stress? Are these tics an indication of something more serious, or are they simple tics that will go away in time? I haven't brought her to the GP yet. I'd appreciate your opinion on this.
This is a tough one. Sorry you didn't go to the GP, or at least ring the GP up. Mm. About 20 to 25% of all children will develop a movement disorder, a tic of some kind.
Yeah.
Most often it is a facial tic. Most often it will eventually go away. Tics, the typical course of tics is head down, starting with the eyes and blinking, and then if other tics develop, it tends to go further down the motor system. Mm. These are unusual, and it started with her fingers. I don't know what to make of that. I think medical input can only answer the question. I would not say to her it's a bad habit. Don't draw attention to it. It may go away. Your husband could be dead right, because transient tics do go away, and sometimes they go away in months, and sometimes it takes a lot longer. We don't do much for it, really. Now, if it becomes an obstacle to her ability to socialize, to gain benefit from her education, to integrate with other people, or to be out in the community, then some therapeutic interventions may be necessary. We do have some techniques to deal with tics if they are genuinely tics. But I can only tell you how I work. If you had come to my office with this situation and showed me some videos, I would be very strongly encouraging you to discuss it with your GP before you assume it's something that needs psychological intervention. Yes, we can help. We have the technology to do this, but most any reasonable practitioner will want the all clear from the medical side before we begin to treat something as though it was psychological, emotional, stress-related, anxiety-related. Could it be any of those things? Yes, it could. But I'd want to know definitively, as best as possible, from GP and or perhaps pediatric neurologist, whether there's something medical here or not before I start treating it otherwise.
Right. A few comments of some of the questions we've had so far. A 9-year-old lass decided to pick on my son for his skin colour too. My son was devastated. After the teacher noticed, my son got a chance to stand up in front of the class. He told them he expected racists in our home estate, but not from his good pals in school. Good for him. For the fella who's had the foot and mouth and now is ill, for the little lad who's off his food, just leave food around the place for him, like a little buffet. It will help him to eat little and often, and it also helped me to get my kids to eat different food, as they just grab and shove it in and then move on to do whatever they're happy destructing at the time. That's actually very good advice, actually, because
yes,
they tune into like a piece of carrot squashed into their hand at all times. Please thank David for his explanation regarding processing language when the person is on the spectrum. I'm a mum to a 30-year-old son who is very articulate but needs time to process and respond. It causes others to think his problems are not as serious as they are.
Yeah,
that's a very good point.
That is a very good point. And you will see this when you are speaking to people on the spectrum. You get kind of two general responses. If you ask them, do you understand, they may immediately respond by saying yes, yes, yes. And then we assume they do understand. You need to follow that up with another question. What did I just say?
Yeah.
What is it you understand? Can you explain a little bit more about what you understand? If they can, then you know they understand. If they can't, then you know they don't. The rule typically is rephrase, do not simply repeat. If they didn't comprehend it the first time you said it that way, they're unlikely to comprehend it the second time you say it exactly the same way. Mm. So we rephrase our verbal interventions and we shorten them. There's trial and error here in a learning curve because everyone on the spectrum is different. So what we do is we pare down our verbal interventions into smaller and smaller chunks until we get to the level at which we know they are actually comprehending. That could be one particularly critical piece of information only, or it could be two, or it could be three, or four. You don't know until you begin to go down the chain this way. But it does work, and it's very helpful.
Can you please ask the lovely David Carey what to do about our 3.5-year-old daughter? She gets so frustrated and full of anger that she punches herself in the head and pinches herself. It's awfully upsetting. She's our only child, a desperate mum in Galway.
That, I'm sure, is enormously upsetting. Now, all of these anger outbursts in children exist on a continuum from the earliest sign of arousal to the penultimate sign, in this case, of punching herself in the head. The rule of behavior disruption is simple, but difficult at the same time. You must observe very carefully for the earliest warning signs. Sometimes it will appear that there are none, but if you observe closely, there may be. It could be a clenched fist, the twitching of a leg or a foot, an angry expression on the face. The earlier in the sequence you create an intervention and or a distraction, the less likely the penultimate event will occur. So that's the rule. So let's spend some time observing how this happens. How is it she's upsetting herself? Look for triggers. What are the circumstances in which she is getting so upset that she ultimately punches herself? Is it because she's frustrated and isn't getting her way? Is it happening a particular time of the day? Is it happening in a particular place? Is it happening with particular individuals? I've said this before, there's a lot of data to be gathered through our eyes and our ears over a period of days before we can create a meaningful intervention plan. You can stop this problem. It mightn't be easy, but you must begin by looking for all the things I've suggested you look for.
Yeah.
And then get in there early in the chain with a distraction, a humorous comment, picking her up, holding her hand, showing her a new toy as a distraction, etc. There's lots of things you can do. Have you even begun to think of talking with her and showing her some breathing exercises that you can do together? Popularly now we call this mindfulness, but the role of correct breathing and deep breathing is never to be underestimated in lowering levels of arousal and in managing anger and stress. It really is helpful. There are a lot of apps available. There's a lot of CDs and DVDs out there for little children. Something as simple as playing some soothing non-vocal music with her and sitting down or laying down on the floor. Little technique, hold her on your chest and tummy while you breathe deeply in and out in a very relaxed and comfortable way, and invite her to breathe with mommy and or daddy, whoever is doing it with her. And this will teach her how to breathe properly. And when you begin to see her getting aroused, it's time to say, oops, time to do her little breathing. Let's see if that doesn't help now. And eventually she will stop the hitting. Yeah.
This is, I mean, because we've had the question of head banging, or kids banging their heads off the floor multiple times.
Yeah.
Would this be of a piece with that?
I expect it is. It's frustration intolerance, actually.
Yeah, yeah.
And difficulty to control your general level of arousal in a 3-year-old. It happens.
Lots of comments on the girl who may or may not have a tic. She could be self-stimulating. It's sometimes part of the autistic spectrum. It helps people concentrate.
Well, yeah, I hate to mention the spectrum thing when we're dealing
because
with...
Because we don't know.
We don't know. And that's honestly, that scares the hell out of people as soon as you say it could be.
Yeah.
You know, that's too extreme just yet.
Yeah, yeah. Just on thought of another question that we had, the question about the period. Someone wants to know, how do I prepare my 10-year-old daughter for the fact that periods may be, as mine were, extremely painful? I don't want to frighten her.
This is a question best answered by one of our female listeners, I think. Generally speaking, we don't want to alert children to the fact that some extreme distress may happen to them.
Yeah.
That's not a good idea. Deal with the distress as it comes. This is advice coming from a male of the species, so I think generally it's good advice. I wouldn't say to my boy that you may get badly injured on the rugby pitch, but go out and try your best, son. And if your nose gets broken and your arm is broken, we'll look after you then. You know, that's not how we prepare children for the life of the unexpected. So I don't think you should go down that road. But I'd be very curious to hear from moms as to how they've dealt with it with their daughters, or dads even.
Yeah.
Dads aren't ruled out from the equation, but moms are infinitely more tuned into this.
In terms of, yeah, then again, I suppose they get a lot of information from their peers anyway. So, you can't insulate them. If you as a parent sit down with your little girl and say, well, this thing's going to happen, called a period, I bet you they already have been told about that by somebody else.
Well, it's part of the school curriculum, for one thing, in primary school. So they will be alerted to it, depending on the age of the child. These things must be dealt with sensitivity and delicacy and optimism, I think.
Yeah.
It is, of course, a sign of becoming a mature person. It's a sign of growing up, and that's a wonderful thing. Yes, it probably sometimes brings some discomfort in the form of a tummy pain or something. I wouldn't go beyond that.
Yeah, yeah. Plus, also, it's a great way of getting out having to do sports, according to all my daughters, anyway.
Oh, is that? Okay.
how do you tell a 9-year-old boy he has dyspraxia, diagnosed with dyslexia also in February?
Well, you don't have to use the word dyspraxia.
Yeah.
You can say to him what you see. In other words, children with dyspraxia, often called the clumsy child syndrome, generally have problems knowing where their arms and legs are in space, so they trip over things, they knock things over, they spill the milk. You can comment on that. And you can simply say, you know, we've noticed that you're having a lot of problems kicking the ball back to daddy out in the back garden. You're 9, you're having some difficulties riding your bicycle still. Balance is a little bit of a problem. You know, some boys and some girls have a problem with that because their brain just isn't maturing quick enough to let all that happen. Seems like that's it for you. If he wants to know more, what's it called? You can say dyspraxia. That's a choice, actually, whether you want to label it dyspraxia or not. An explanation to children about the special needs conditions they may have is really important. There comes a time in the life when you do need to tell them. Because they know and they're observing that there are things that they can't do that other boys and girls their age do with tremendous ease. And it's embarrassing, particularly if dyspraxia is severe. Then obviously in terms of sports, you're just one out and nobody wants to play with you. And also, please feel free to ring up the Dyspraxia Ireland Association. We can source their number for you. I don't know it off the top of my head. It's a support group. Wonderful gentleman there, Mr. Harry Conway, will be very happy to talk to you over the phone. They have tons of information about dyspraxia and can guide you and talk to you about how to talk to your child. They also have resources and they sponsor sports teams for children with dyspraxia.
Oh,
yeah.
That's a lovely idea. Yeah. That's a lovely idea.
Help is often right there available. Can I say something about the little boy that I'm dying to talk to? And I'd love to see more of lads like this, who recently said to his brother, and I quote, "You have a face like a bag of testicles," which
indeed.
I just think is a very clever and wonderful thing to say, regardless of how insulting and appalling it might have been. But, young people like this intrigue me.
Yeah.
And I like to engage with them because they see and think things a bit differently and just say it the way it is sometimes.
I think it was Patrick Kavanagh once described someone as having a face like a plate full of mortal sins.
Well,
this young man could be one of our next great writers.
It could very possibly be.
Listen in every Wednesday at 3 p.m. here on Moncrief for more parenting advice from David Carey.